Here comes another, Continent of Media, number 0409, produced November 30th, 2004. COM is about media around the American continent, not especially shortwave, and is a monthly to sesquimonthly supplement to my weekly program, World of Radio. Continent of Media is made possible by Universal Radio for quality shortwave and amateur radio equipment. Phone them for a catalog, 1-800-431-3939, or check their website, www.universal-radio.com. Universal also sponsors www.dxing.com, where you can find much more information, including the latest edition of this program and DX Listening Digest. By the way, this program is expected to be released later as World of Radio Extra 54. Let's start with a story from the Daily Herald somewhere in Utah with a headline that caught my eye, Krishna Radio Hits the Airwaves. After a four-year hiatus, Spanish Fork, Utah's KHQN Krishna Radio is back on the air. The Indian devotee station, which plays dramas, devotional music, and lectures, among other spiritual content, started broadcasting again from 1480 a.m. about 3 weeks before, and can be heard on a clear signal throughout the Utah Valley. For the past few years, the station has been loaned out to a Spanish-language community, but now the Krishnas are back, and their content is better, says program director Charo Das. We're really excited about the format. We think people will really like it. The type of music we choose will resonate with everyone's innermost being, regardless if they're black, white, red, yellow, or green. FCC requires Krishna Radio to reduce power after sunset. Well, I checked this out in the NRC AM log. It says it's a daytime station with 1,000 watts. Also allowed pre-sunrise authority starting at 6 a.m. Mountain Time of 500 watts. So if this is correct, it should not be on the air at all after local sunset. The station began in 1994 with the Krishna format, but in 1999, the Utah Krishnas started construction on the temple, and a Spanish-language community approached them about using the station. Das said they came at the perfect time. We were broke, and it provided needed cash. The temple, which has cost $1.2 million, opened in 2001. Now with the Spanish station moving on and the Krishnas solid on their feet, they've started to broadcast once again with new technology and more than 1,000 songs to play. Das has a trip to India planned for January that will result in an even larger music collection. And it's also webcast via www.utahkrishnas.com. Again, that's KHQN 1480, Spanish Fork, Utah. Thanks to Artie Pigley for sending on this story. While we're in Utah, another interesting item from Bruce Elving's FM Media for November. A station in South Salt Lake, KDYL 1060, running 10 kilowatt in the daytime, 150 watts at nights, has installed Leonard Kahn's CAMD or CAMD system. It's said to confer the benefits of IBOC without creating adjacent channel slopover. According to Kahn, there's no need to have to buy new transmitters, towers, or processing equipment with his system. So I wonder if anyone is listening to 1060 and notices anything different about it, such as the CAMD digital system as well as regular analog transmission. We're staying in the American West for a few more items. Thanks to Joe Buck for this from the Pasadena Star News in California of November 11th, ham radio operators to skip Rose Parade. A pair of hams were lugging equipment onto the grounds of Tournament House in preparation for last year's parade when they were stopped by a senior tournament official. This person came absolutely unglued, reports Alan Hubbard, a board member of the Tournament of Roses radio hams. He was accusing them of lying to get on the grounds. Although they're not officially part of the Tournament of Roses, the radio amateurs have been providing a communications link along the Rose Parade route for more than two sesquidecades. Radio operators have routinely shadowed tournament white suitors, behaving like a volunteer signal corps straight out of World War II. But in the age of cell phones, they have begun to feel unwanted. The Tournament of Roses radio amateurs has voted not to participate in the upcoming parade, after suffering what they perceive to be a series of indignities. Hubbard said this has been building for at least the last 4 years. For many of the more than 250 club members, the incident at Tournament House was the last straw. Bill Flynn, the tournament's chief operating officer, said, "I think it's come to the end of a run. We're sorry to see them go." Most white suitors have cell phones and don't need a radio operator shadowing their every move. Nextel is a corporate sponsor of the parade and has donated a number of phones to the tournament. That does not sit well with the hams, who point out that cell phones often lose reception in areas where ham radios work. Hams also pride themselves on being hobbyists, not profit seekers. Earl Bunker, a club member for 20 years, says, "We provide a genuine service to the tournament. The people we work with, the white suitors, are very much for us. They tell us that. It's somebody farther up the line." Bunker says every year there's $70,000 worth of private equipment brought in to help the Rose Parade. "I think there are some who think they can do it all with Nextel. I don't think they can." The tournament will get along without the radio operators this time, Flynn said, and consider having them back for the 2006 parade. Hubbard said his wife is looking forward to taking him out for a New Year's Eve party for the first time in a sesquidecade. Lefties take over Santa Fe airwaves as right-wing talk radio dwindles. "We figured it would not be too much longer before Air America had an affiliate in Santa Fe, Nuevo Mexico, and now it does," the New Mexican reported on November 16th, thanks to Artie Bigley for this story. Conservative Republicans might control the White House, Congress, and the Supreme Court, but the right-wing dominance of a local talk radio station is about to end as the unabashedly liberal Air America Network readies to start broadcasting at KTRC, 1260 a.m. in Santa Fe. John Sinton, president of Air America, says, "We're very excited. Santa Fe is a natural for us." KTRC, which is owned by the AGM radio group, for years broadcast left-leaning programs from the IE America Network, which was affiliated with the United Auto Workers Union. However, IE America shut down early this year. KTRC kept one of the old shows, the Tom Hartman radio program, but added ultra-conservative talk shows, such as WorldNet Daily Radioactive. Last spring, a Texas radio company announced it would bring Air America to Santa Fe, but those plans fell through. Recently, Air America picked up an Albuquerque station, KABQ 1350, but reception of that in Santa Fe is not good. The KTRC deal has been in the works for several months. In Santa Fe County, Democrats outnumber Republicans 3-1. Democrat John Kerry got more than 70% of the vote against George Bush in November. Sinton of Air America says, "We're on in liberal communities like Ann Arbor, Madison, and Portland, but our most stimulating debut was in San Diego, a very conservative city." According to the San Diego Union-Tribune website, Arbitron ratings in September showed that KLSD AM with Air America was the number one station with listeners between the ages of 25 and 54. Because of contractual obligations, Michael Reagan will continue his broadcast a few more weeknights on KTRC. And there's another Air America story, this time from another liberal place, Eugene, Oregon. The Register Guard by Joe Harwood reported on November 9th, also via Artie Bigley. Churchill Communications, the broadcast company that went live with the region's first 24/7 Hispanic radio format, is about to score another milestone. The Eugene Springfield premiere of liberal-leaning Air America Radio, led by satirist and writer Al Franken. It's on KOPT 1450 AM in Lane County, Oregon, where 59% of the voters cast votes for Kerry, 41% for Bush. Meanwhile, La X, which had been on 1450, the Hispanic format, moves to KZTU 660. The New York Observer Online carries an interesting series of media columns by Joe Hagan. And here's one from November 17th, Amy Goodman's Left Hook for Cable TV. In the wide, wide political spectrum of cable news punditry, that is, Beltway red and blue, Republican and Democrat, Amy Goodman is a nice shade of shocking pink. She's a good old-fashioned lefty. But if you think the 47-year-old host of the liberal radio and TV show Democracy Now! And author of The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them, if you think she's on the far left, that's just because everything you're seeing and hearing on TV is in shades of red. Ms. Goodman says, "It's the right debating the far right. We need something outside that. Until now, she's mainly had to confine her classic activism to a narrow sliver of FM radio, Pacifica, and to a simulcast cable access program in Manhattan. But now that the roar of the presidential election has subsided and Scott Peterson's news value has screeched to a halt, cable newsmakers are looking for fresh material. Enter Ms. Goodman, an unapologetic progressive within a media that has run out of so many storylines that liberal activists are interesting once more. In her book, Ms. Goodman accuses the press of sucking up to government officials the access of evil and consisting of talking heads who, she said, know so little about so much, commenting on every issue. On November 12th, Ms. Goodman turned up on Tucker Carlson's PBS show Unfiltered, which led to a big booking on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. Mr. Matthews' executive producer, Tammy Haddad, saw Ms. Goodman on Tucker's show and thought she was an amazing talker and certainly worth talking to. Her point is that journalists are in collusion with officialdom. In keeping with her constituency, Ms. Goodman got booked on Carlson's show thanks to a lefty San Francisco cab driver. "We were having this conversation about politics," said Mr. Carlson. He was a radical lefty. "I kind of like that better than liberals." And he said, "Do you know Amy Goodman?" And he said, "You gotta have her on." I called my booker, and we booked her. On TV, Ms. Goodman comes off as a no-frills Noam Chomsky pinup, an anti-Deborah Norville who'll rip your throat out if you don't answer the question. "She's ready for prime time?" NYTV asked Ms. Goodman if she would ever take a regular gig on a show like Fox News Sunday, as NPR's Juan Williams did. She didn't count it out. "The TV news media," she said, "have reached an all-time low, so I welcome the opportunity to talk about these issues." That's just part of the article, and we'll include a link to the complete piece in the summary for this continent of media, 0409, via worldofradio.com. By the way, we're always glad to hear from listeners who have information to contribute or to comment. Our address is WORADIO@yahoo.com or P.O. Box 1684, ENIDOK 73702, USA. Another lighter, we recommend the annual Ig Nobel Awards. As I speak, I've not yet heard them, but the broadcast every year on the Friday after Thanksgiving on NPR's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. You can find an audio archive via www.sciencefriday.com. That's November 26th. However, I believe that is actually an edited down version. There's another website with video, and it may be the complete version. www.improbable.com/ig/ig-top.html. One of the hallmarks of the Ig Nobel Awards is frequent interruptions by a little girl saying, "Please stop, I'm bored." That keeps the acceptance speeches short and the show moving along, a tactic some other award shows might consider using. Thanks to Larry Russell, who reminded us of this year's Ig Nobel Awards, in an item on the Mayor tip sheet. He heard a show about it on WGN. Richard Cuff posted on the SW Programs list a column by Tom Shales in the Washington Post. Not sure the exact date. It was sometime in mid-November. You can probably find it if you look for it. Titled, "Michael Powell Exposed, the FCC Chairman Has No Clothes." I used to enjoy listening to Tom Shales with his very wry commentaries on NPR, and I can just hear him speaking these words. Perhaps you can, too, as I excerpt just a few of the juicier bits. "Oops, they got rid of the wrong Powell. The father, unfortunately, is going, but the son, even more unfortunately, remains behind. Colin Powell, as most Americans know, has resigned his position as Secretary of State, though few in the inner circle of the cold-hearted Bush administration will likely be shedding tears at his departure. Staying in office, however, incapable of wreaking havoc in American broadcasting until 2007, is Colin's son Michael Powell, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, and definitely not a force for good in America. Pompous and imperious, an ideologue who believes unfailingly in his own philosophy of how TV and radio should work. The FCC also has domain over telephone and emerging broadband. Powell ignores or condemns anyone who opposes him. Though FCC chairmen have labored mostly in obscurity, Powell has managed to make himself famous. He's the Torquemada of the insane campaign now being waged against obscenity on the airwaves. There was, according to legend, a face that launched 1,000 ships. This is about a nipple that inflamed 1,000 nutcases. Janet Jackson's brief breast exposure during halftime of the Super Bowl has led to hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines, a wave of hypocritical hysteria with which Democrats as well as Republicans are only too happy to be associated, and a state of affairs that boils down to open season on the First Amendment, the bedrock of the Bill of Rights. At no point did anyone, including Chairman Powell, position now like Attila at the head of the Huns, produce one single living creature, man, woman, child, toddler, infant, newborn, late-term fetus, dog, cat, rooster, horse, or parakeet, who saw the briefly exposed nipple and was in any tangible way harmed by it. Like most of the halftime entertainment, it was tastelessly inappropriate, but the ensuing mass fuss is a farce that has made America an international laughingstock again. In fairness to Powell, the Commission's two Democratic members, Michael J. Copps and Jonathan S. Adelstein, have been among those pushing for not only fines but license revocations when stations violate the still-vague obscenity rules. They are idiots. The madness reached its appalling apotheosis on Veterans Day. 65 of ABC's 220 owned or affiliated stations declined to air the universally praised Steven Spielberg film Saving Private Ryan about American heroes of World War II, because the verboten F-word is spoken several times, and the FCC now fines stations, sometimes astronomical amounts, if even a few people file complaints over what they have heard. This means Spielberg's acclaimed Holocaust film Schindler's List cannot be shown again on a broadcast network, because it too contains unpleasant language and, of course, graphic violence. See, it's about the Nazis, and they tended to be a little pushy. But realism is no defense. Artistic excellence is no defense. Even a consensus that the program in question constitutes a public service is no defense. The usual suspects are in the driver's seat, fanatical right-wing groups that include words like family or decency in their names, and view increased permissiveness on TV as part of a left-wing plot to undermine moral values. They have mastered the art of making minor protests look like huge movements by manipulating the Internet and the mimeograph machine. Arrogant is the adjective used most often in any discussion of Powell and the way he pushes his personal agenda, an extension of the fanatical deregulation that gathered steam under Ronald Reagan's FCC chairman, a reckless loudmouth named Mark Fowler. Basically, the theology is this: commercial interests come first, second, and third among priorities, and the public interest, convenience, and necessity, which the FCC is mandated to uphold, straggles in a distant fourth. Powell is much better tailored and milder mannered than Fowler, but equally stubborn and self-adoring. He seems never to have met a media merger he did not like, which will result in the virtual death of local television and radio in America, as station after station is sucked up into one enormous, unfeeling conglomerate or another. We stand at the top of a dangerously slippery slope. When you start leveling fines for uttering certain words, the list of the verboten is bound to grow. We could be facing 4 years of even more paranoia than usual about Big Brother, much of it justified. Powell belongs at the bottom of the barrel of FCC commissioners, with the lowliest of the bunch. He's an agenda masquerading as a man, the proverbial pompous ass, and worse, a genuine threat to freedom of speech. Those were the opinions of Washington Post columnist Tom Shales. Somewhat more objectively, an FCC press release of November 24th via BBC Monitoring about the Spectrum auction of FM licenses, which has netted $147 megadollars. Auction number 37 is closed, in which 110 bidders won 258 FM broadcast construction permits. Many of the winners are new entrants into the broadcast market. The auction began on November 3rd and closed on the 23rd after 62 rounds of bidding. It was the first ever open auction of FM broadcast spectrum held by the FCC, and hundreds participated in the bidding process. The FCC plans to hold annual auctions for more FMCPs over the next several years. In 1997, Congress mandated the use of competitive bidding procedures for commercial broadcast station licensing. The full list of winning bidders and markets is available at the FCC website, wireless.fcc.gov/auctions. By the way, public radio stations were also involved, but I understand that only one was rich enough to buy a license. That was WGBH in Boston for another relay on Cape Cod. We heard the following from George McClintock in Nashville, Tennessee on November 6th. There's an FM pirate here from what I hear is a very nice New York quality gay nightclub on 101.7. It hides under the signal of a legal out-of-town station on the same frequency, but covers several miles around the club, maybe running 50 watts with a 40-foot ground plane antenna. Someone from the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters visited the club and asked them to close it down, but the club claimed it is legal under Part 15 rules, that is, much lower powered than it seems. It plays automated music with announcements about coming to the club. No IDs have been heard. Then on November 22nd, George followed up with this news. The 101.7 pirate was taken off the air last Thursday by the FCC, which visited it and ordered it to close. The equipment was not confiscated, but it has not come back on. The FCC calculated it was running 1/8 of a watt with a 5/8 wave antenna. The legal limit for unlicensed broadcasting on FM is 0.01 microwatts ERP. This was originally specified as 250 microvolts at 3 meters, but that is difficult to measure, so it was later clarified to that ERP, or another way to put it is a 200-foot maximum coverage radius. The pirate was measured with 90 millivolts at 90 feet, that is 71 dB above tolerance. Reportedly, it had been on the air for many months. The FCC just wants it off the air and to stay off. They do not want the equipment or to have to keep bothering with it. Speaking of gay radio, a couple of other items have come across our desk recently. One from, of all places, Argentina. On the Conexión Digital list, José Alba posted an article about radio gay in Internet. It's not shortwave, but a variant of radio. There's a new station for prostitutes, putos. I guess he thinks all gay people are prostitutes, which transmits from Argentina only on Internet, and which can be heard at www.argentinagayradio.com.ar. They started the previous month, according to press reports. This is slightly beyond America, but the related topic is South Africa, where State Radio 2000 has launched a weekly gay program. According to the South African Press Agency website, via BBC Monitoring, it's called The Tuesday Night Show, a weekly two-hour radio show pitched as non-stereotype radio, aimed primarily at the gay and lesbian community. It's at 1800 UT or 2000 local time since November 9th on the Radio 2000 frequency. Believed to be among the first non-beefcake, unisex, gay and lesbian interest electronic media in South Africa. For more info about the Tuesday Night Show, visit www.tuesdaynight.co.za. Back to family values now. From Mike Dorner's Catholic Radio Update, Cleveland Wheeler is quoted from Radio Daily News, "Radio is mediocre here at Tampa Bay. As it is most places in America, there's little passion in the voices I hear. Very few people sound like they're genuinely having fun. It's hard to know whether anyone is live. Spoken content is also generic, that most everything could be voice-tracked in advance." That's followed by Mike Dorner's own commentary titled, "All Hucksters All the Time, The End of the Sanctity of the Hearth." I suppose it's another symptom of old age. Lately, I've been wondering and trying to imagine what life was like before radio and television invaded our homes. Homes, not houses. What was life like for our great-grandparents and their ancestors? I can barely imagine, and only in the abstract, what life was like before the incessant noise of our electronic media, noise that pervades every household from dawn to bedtime, and often all night, as people sleep to the blare of televisions and radios. Lately, I've found someone else who shares my thoughts in this matter. One of the finest radio websites is Radio Daily News, which I read faithfully. The other morning there was one of those frequent delightful essays on what radio used to be. These autobiographical notes are very fine reading, and for those of us who are no longer wet behind the ears, a trip back into time. Cleveland Wheeler, a successful radio broadcast man and then one of the people who put satellite radio into shape and on the air, spoke of an experience he had with his fiancée and his mother at a dinner at his place. My mother had experienced music's place in life before radio, and how radio changed the world. She began to recount her childhood experiences at her grandmother's house, where Saturday nights were regular musical house parties. Some brought fiddles, others brought guitars. Everyone had a voice. There it was. People assembled around the piano or the guitar or whatever musical instrument they had. They sang, they talked, they had refreshments. If it were warm weather, they moved onto the lawn or the screen porch. On ordinary nights and weekends, people talked with each other, with family, with relatives, with neighbors. They visited. They were aware of their neighborhood and their community without the middleman doing a stand-up report in front of a spectacular background, mouthing journalistic platitudes into a mic and camera. People associated, related, directly, face-to-face, not electronically. They heard what their neighbors thought about things directly, not by listening to their voices coming over the radio on a phone-in show. There was an immediacy to life that has been lost. The dice irretrievably were cast. The nose of the camel was in the tent. Soon the whole camel would be inside. We were being invaded by a relentless, noisy intruder that, for all its many benefits, would forever change human intercourse in the old meaning of the term. The time was fast coming when the electronic media would be so pervasive that they would be nigh the sole medium of interfacing with the neighborhood, the community, the world. Worse, electronic media would utterly and with finality destroy the sacrosanct atmosphere of the hearth. In the eyes of the purposes of those who are its kingpins, the electronic media are advertising media. They exist to sell, to convince us we have need of whatever they are harking. No longer was the salesman confined to the marketplace and knocking on the front door. Now he entered the living rooms of America, and people sat riveted in front of radio and TV, whose sole purpose was and is to sell us something. Something we probably don't need. The entertainment is simply the bait. How quiet the houses of our great-grandparents must have been. There was time for thought, reading, writing, music, meaningful conversation. But soon the sanctity, the peace of the family hearth would only be memories. The words of Michael Dorner in his Catholic Radio Update, spoken here by Glenn Hauser for Continent of Media 0409, also known as World of Radio Extra 54.